If you open your Bibles to James chapter 5, please, we'll be looking at a couple of verses from there. A short section of chapter 5, but very important. James chapter 5, verse 11. But above all, my brethren, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or with any other oath, but your yes is to be yes and your no, no, so that you may not fall under judgment. Very simple verse, but very profound in its application. I don't believe James is talking about here whether or not when we go to court, we don't put our hand on a Bible and raise our other hand and swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. I don't think he's just talking about whether we make formal oaths or not. I think in the big picture, what he's talking about here is basic honesty. Letting our yes be yes and our no be no. Because what he's talking about here and what our Lord talks about in other passages, and we'll read those too, has to do with the abuse of oath taking. It has to do with taking oaths other than before the Lord. It has to do with the idea that there are some oaths you don't have to keep and some oaths you do. The key, I think, in this particular passage is where he says, either by heaven or by earth, or with any other oath. Well, what is an oath anyway? You're saying that you're going to testify and you're going to tell the truth and God is your witness that you're telling the truth. And may God punish me if I don't tell the truth. Isn't that really what it's all about? And usually it's the kind of thing that happens in a courtroom situation. You go into court and you're a witness, and it is absolutely essential that you get your story right and you tell it truthfully and you don't distort it, because somebody else's life is on the line. Somebody else's freedom is on the line. In fact, in the Old Testament, if you lied under oath as a witness, and they found out about it, you could be sentenced to the same sentence the person would have been sentenced to if they'd been found guilty. In other words, if you lie at a murder trial, you could get the death penalty because your lie was helping to put somebody else to death. If the penalty was 40 minus one stripes, that's what you'd get if you lied in court. And you made a solemn vow that God punish me if I don't tell the truth. And that was what a vow was all about. We take vows when we get married, don't we? We promise each other that we're going to be faithful unto death, but we're also promising it before man and before God. It's a vow. But what happened? What happened to the Israelites? What did they end up doing? What happened to the scribes and Pharisees was that they looked at this and they said, you know, if you look at the law really carefully, verse 33 of Matthew 5 is one example. I'll read another one in a minute. Jesus is speaking here. Again, you have heard the ancients were told, you shall not make false vows, but shall fulfill your vows to the Lord. Okay, so if you make a vow to the Lord, you've got to keep it. That's the Old Testament law. Still true. But what did they look at it? How did they look at it? Well, but I say to you, make no oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it's the footstool of his feet, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king, nor shall you make an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair black or white, but let your statement be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything beyond these is of evil. I'll read another one, I hope I can tie it all together pretty well. Jesus is criticizing the teachers, scribes and Pharisees. Woe to you blind guides who say, whoever swears by the temple, that is nothing. But whoever swears by the gold of the temple is obligated. You fools and blind men, which is more important, the gold of the temple or the gold or the temple that sanctified the gold? And whoever swears by the altar, that's nothing. But whoever swears by the offering on it, he's obligated. You blind men, which is more important, the offering or the altar that sanctifies the offering? See, what was happening is they were looking for loopholes, like people do. You know, if you're just looking at the law, and you look at the word of the law, you look for loopholes. And so if I have to tell the truth when I'm under oath, doesn't that mean I don't have to tell the truth when I'm not under oath? So what do? I swear by heaven. Instead of by God, I'll swear by heaven, and I won't be sinning if I'm lying. I'll swear by the altar, or I'll swear by the gold on the altar. Well, wait a minute, which one counts? And they start parsing all of this stuff out. But it's degenerated. It the whole idea of oath-taking had degenerated, and we do it today. Have you ever heard a young person say, swear to God, swear to God, swear to God, swear to God, swear to God? If they don't have that little phrase in there, maybe you know they're lying. Or maybe you know that they're in the habit of not being believed. What does it mean? What does it mean to have to always assert your truthfulness by saying, I swear on a stack of Bibles? And somebody turns around and says, well, how big is the stack? Is it a 5-Bible stack or a 4-Bible stack? I know some people that need a 10-Bible stack before I believe them. But what is it about? It's about dishonesty, isn't it? And that's the whole point. And that's the point that James is making here. This oath-taking and this need to have to swear to the truth of what you're saying all of the time is an indictment against our own honesty. Isn't it? If we don't have a reputation for telling the truth, period, telling the truth, what will people want? They'll want you to take an oath. You can't just make a promise. It has to be a pinky promise or whatever else you do, you know. You have to be sure you see all of their hands so no fingers are crossed behind your back, right? Isn't that what it's like? You know, I'm going to swear by the hair of my head, as few as they may be. You know, or swear on my mother's grave as if she cares. You know? I mean, he said, don't do that. And that's what James is saying here. You trivialize the whole idea of truth-telling. You use this idea of oath-taking as an excuse to tell lies the rest of your life. Unless I take an oath, you can't count on what I have to say. And what's Jesus saying? Be a truth-teller. God's people are people of the truth. God is truth. We belong to God. Therefore, we need to be truthful people. Are there some things that we don't have to share with other people? Yes. And we can tell the truth if we say it's none of your business when it isn't any of your business. I mean, it's not like we are legally obligated to tell people everything unless it's helpful. But we do need to tell the truth and be truthful people. And so, this oath-taking idea, we're defeated right off the bat if we're in a situation where we have to take an oath. We ought to be such a folk, such a character, that people will trust what we say when we say it, and we won't have to sign in blood. We won't have to have a contract or anything like that. It's so unfortunate that it has to be that way nowadays. People used to people used to say, well, I remember the time when a man's word was his bond. And maybe that was true. But I think people were always like that because people are like, you know, kind of messed up back in James's day too. But, you know, think about it. You call a contractor and he says he'll come on Tuesday. But what it really means is it's some Tuesday anytime between now and December. Doesn't it happen that way? Sometimes it's bad planning, he has the best of intentions. Sometimes he just doesn't want to say no. But it happens. And what happened, and I'm just picking on that, but look at what our state had to do when they're building the bridge between Kittery and Portsmouth. So many thousands of dollars a day for every day the contract was late in being fulfilled. You couldn't just say, okay, we're going to have it done by such and such a date. It had to be written down. If you go past this date, we're charging you money. Have we gotten to the point where the only way you can get somebody to do what's right is to fine them? To follow up on their promises? It ought not to be that way with us. Our yes ought to be yes and our no ought to be no. And it isn't just companies. It's us as individuals. Guys, do you want to stop your wife from nagging? Or at least to cut it down by 80%? You can do it. The key is in this verse. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. So what happens is this. You have a whole list of priorities, the things you want to do around the house, right? And your wife has a whole list of things she wants to do around the house. Her list is different from your list, right? That is the way it is. Okay, so she has this number one item that she really wants to get done. And she tells you about it. And I really need to have this done. Yeah, I'll take care of it. Well, you said yes. Okay. Did you say, yes, I'll do it on Tuesday, but you mean any Tuesday between now and December? You know, we do that to our wives. And what happens? Well, they remind us. And whenever a wife reminds a husband of something he already knows, he calls it nagging. Until finally it becomes like, you know, nails on the chalkboard, and you can't stand it anymore, and you got to do it. And you do it with a bad attitude. Isn't that the way it works? But there's a trick. There's a trick to this. You look at what she wants you to do. If there's no way you can possibly do it, I don't have the skills, I don't have the time, we don't have the money, say no. It isn't going to happen in our lifetime unless we hire somebody. Or unless we win the lottery or something. But the answer is no. Don't expect it. I can't say yes and then have you keeping on hounding me when I really meant no in the first place. Or I could look at my calendar, look at my list and adjust things and say, honey, you know, I have to do these things first, but I think I'll be able to do that this Saturday afternoon. Okay. Make your yes be yes and your Saturday afternoon be Saturday afternoon. Okay? So what's going to happen? Saturday afternoon, you're going to do it. And your yes is going to be yes. And your wife spends the rest of the week in happy anticipation. Okay, it's going to be done. It's going to be done. It's going to be done. And so what happens? Well, if your yes is yes and you do it on Saturday afternoon, you're the hero, right? Hey, we got it done. You know, and wives, if you want it to happen again, you do the my hero bit, okay? My hero. You know, let him know you like it. He'll probably do it again. Now, the worst thing you can do is say you're going to do it Saturday afternoon and then forget and go fishing. Or do something else. Because your word is worthless. You just said you... The promises you make don't count. You're starting a track record of showing that the promises you make are not going to be met. And then as soon as you do that, you're going to be reminded and reminded and reminded. Well, what happens if you call the carpenter and you want to get something fixed and he doesn't show up when he said he would? Well, you telephone him. And you telephone him. And you telephone them, and each telephone gets a little bit more frustrated, a little bit more angry. Well, it's going to happen to you. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. You have to be accurate, and you have to be determined to make your promises come true when you tell your wife that they're coming true. I mean, you know, if the house burns down, she'll understand. But in between times, let your yes be yes and your no be no. And it goes from both ways, of course. But that... If you just work out that thing, at least half of whatever you think might be nagging will go away. And usually the wives won't mind if their wishes happen to be on a list, a bigger list, and it's not necessarily on the top or the bottom. It's in there somewhere. And maybe it's like, okay, you said you had to do these three things, and then my thing's coming in. And so what's she doing? She's checking off your list, right? Okay, his number one thing is done. His number two thing is done. His number three thing is done. I'm next in line. Yes, I'm next in line. Let your yes be yes, please. Or you're asking for trouble, right? So let your yes be yes. I mean, it's right out of the Bible, so guys, let's do it. There are rewards to this, and there are penalties for not doing it. If we don't let our yes be yes and a no be no, we're going to be treated like unreliable people, unbelievable people, people that aren't going to be trusted. It goes with our kids, too. Do we keep our promises to our kids? Do we make promises not intending to keep them? It works in work. It works in business all the way around. I don't know how many times. I really wish, you know, sometimes I'll ask somebody if they want a Bible study and they'll say yes when they mean no. And what happens? Well, when you show up at the door, they pretend they're not home or they're telephone and give an excuse. And how many times does that have to happen before I give up and say, well, I guess that yes really meant no? When it would have been a whole lot simpler just to say, no, I'm not interested. So many times people, in order not to offend, say yes when they really mean no. And they don't realize that the most merciful, most honest, and the best course is just to be honest. And say no when you mean no, and not pretend to mean yes when you mean no. Let's do it that way. Did you ever see, as parents, it makes a huge difference when you're raising kids to let your yes be yes and your no be no. When you keep your word to your kids, you're establishing a pattern of honesty. You're establishing that your word is your bond and it's invaluable. How many times have you seen a parent screaming at their kids? Maybe we've done it. What happens? You tell a child to do something and they don't do it. Well, you tell them louder. They don't do it. Then you threaten them and they don't do it. And you threaten them louder. And you make bigger and bigger threats. What's going on? And what are you doing? Well, they look at you and they say, well, you make all of these threats, but you're not going to do any of that stuff. You're not going to strangle me. You're not going to be throw me in the swimming pool and make sure I drown. You're not going to throw me into a pit of snakes. And all of these threats that you're making, they're unrealistic and they don't count. You're not going to do any of that stuff, so why should I listen to you? So I'm going to keep on doing what I'm going to do, and the neighbors get entertained with all of the yelling and the screaming that's going on. Back in the days when spanking was more fashionable, we had, little Mr. Spanky, a little spanking stick, and if you do this, you're going to get a spanking. And we only had to say it once because they knew if they did that, they were going to get a spanking. And our yes meant yes and our no meant no. And the consequences meant consequences. So we didn't have to yell and scream. We just had to say, well, Mr. Spanky's here. Bum, bum. Are you going to do it or not? And that was it. Now, if you want to do a different punishment, that's fine. But let your yes be yes and your no be no. If you say you're going to lose your telephone privileges, make it happen. Don't say something that you're not going to do. Don't tell them you're going to strangle them and hide the body at Baxter State Park. They're not going to believe you. Or they call the police. But if you tell them they're going to lose their phone privileges, or they're going to lose the visit with their best friend tomorrow, or their whatever else it is that's reasonable and that's in your power to do, don't make a threat that you're not going to carry out. But when you do make it, make it. Half of the problem we have with our kids is because we don't let our yes be yes and our no be no. I mean, there are other complications, and they'll test you and they'll test your perseverance and all sorts of other stuff. But when your yes is yes and your no is no, your life is going to be a lot simpler. And you're going to be easier. Your people around you will know where you stand, and your relationships are going to go a lot smoother, and the relationship with God is going to be the way it's supposed to be too. Because we're being honest with ourselves and honest with other people, and we're being genuine and consistent. And that's what we're being commanded to do. Let her yes be yes and her no be no. There are probably other applications too. Certainly, if you have a reputation at work for being an honest person, they're going to trust you with stuff, aren't they? If they know that you have an accurate assessment of how long it will take to do something, and you give that assessment, they'll trust you on it. And if you say you can't do something by a certain time, they'll know that you can't. And if they say that you can, they'll trust you that you can. There's a whole wide vista of wonderful things that will happen when we start to be more accurate and more honest with our promises and with our answers and with our decision-making in general. So please, if only for conscience' sake, but especially to please the Lord, we're people of truth. God is a God of truth, and that's my challenge to all of us. Let's not let's let our yes be yes and our no be no. And sometimes our maybes are maybes, you know. That's something else that happens. I won't go into that too much, but a lot of times I know with our kids that when we said maybe, it meant maybe. Okay, I've listened to your arguments. It's maybe. We have to discuss it in private or whatever. And sometimes it had to be, well, maybe means maybe, but if you keep on pushing, it's going to turn into a no, and you know what no means. And they know what no means. They know that no means no. No doesn't mean maybe. And that if I push hard enough, I'll change it. So let your yes be yes and your no be no. And don't fall into the trap of thinking the only time I have to be honest is when I sign my name and acknowledge that if I lie, I'm going to jail. Or if I lie in court, the only time I have to tell the truth is when I'm threatened with a jail term or something like that. Our honesty ought to be a character trait for all of us who belong to Christ, because God is a God of truth. Let's put honesty in our lives and not try to dodge or cross our fingers and do all of that kind of stuff. Please, let's bear that in mind. If any of you has any requests for the Lord, if you want to put the Lord on in baptism, you want to learn more about Jesus, please come forward as we stand and as we sing.